take the leap. You'll figure it out. And even if it's painful, you'll still be glad you did it because you're going to come out the other end so much stronger and so much more aware of what you want and what's important to you.
Welcome to The Expanded Podcast with your host, Lacey Phillips. As a leading manifestation advisor with a process that's, well, radically different from the old New Age model, mine is rooted in psychology, neuroscience, and my energetic gifts. I created this podcast to help you expand your subconscious limiting beliefs about the potential of deserving the manifestations you're calling in. Therefore, you're tuning into this podcast series to show your subconscious that anything you desire is possible. And by pressing play, you've already started the process of manifesting it. And if you enjoy this episode, please leave us a review, comment, and share it with your fellow manifester that's struggling or could really benefit from the information that you're about to learn. A few episodes back, you heard me speaking to founder of Blue Blocks, Andy Mant. And in the episode, I go over how I've healed my hormones through alleviating all non-native EMFs, as well as protecting myself from blue light in the evenings. I'm actually super opposed to talking about products on the podcast, but this is one that I think is completely instrumental, like I said on that podcast episode, especially to my female listeners for their hormone protection. I talk about how I've completely healed my hormones from doing the two things I stated above. And a huge component of that has been using Blue Blocks glasses, the red ones, the red lenses in the evening. So I do that as soon as the sun's setting, I throw them on. And in the day, I wear the yellow lenses that are kind of in the cool 50s retro Ray-Ban frames. And I'll also carry around, which I think are super chic, the clear lenses in my purse at all times. I do the really big aviator ones so that that can also help protect me throughout the day, especially when I'm in front of the computer or I'm in front of, you know, my screen. Otherwise, I'm without fail protected in the evening with the red light protection. Now, for you who are still questioning, I highly recommend you go back and listen to that episode. It's Andy Mant, founder of Blue Blocks. And these are the only blue light glasses that are backed by science that actually work. So that should be really reassuring. And they obviously, as I've suggested, have daytime and nighttime lenses. And what's really cool and actually held me back for a long time and Max is that they do prescription. You shoot them your prescription and they'll make you the prescription or non-prescription and readers, whichever you need. It's free shipping all around the world. And you can even send your own frames that you love of whatever glasses you have, and they'll add their lenses to it too. Again, please to my women listeners, all of my listeners, but especially who are dealing with hormone issues, who are dealing with sleep issues, you will notice a difference immediately from using these. I would suggest even after a couple of days, which is what I noticed. Go ahead and use the code MAGNETIC, that's capital MAGNETIC, for 15% off at checkout. And that's Blue Blocks, BLUBLOX. And you can find those in our show notes below. Go heal your hormones. Let's kick this off with another My Magnetic story. My manifestation was a romantic partnership with everything on my list that I was calling in. I met this person in January of this year while he was visiting my city for the weekend, but at the time, I was in a relationship with a shallow, narcissistic man and truly believed that's what I was worth. And that was my pattern, shallow, narcissistic, abusive, and emotionally unavailable men. The one I was already dating in January was the fourth man that had this exact pattern as the three before him had. And I had to run straight into the fire with this one to finally learn my lesson. All four of them also left the same way, abruptly and for another woman. After being burned for the fourth time in April of this year, I decided to take a pause with dating and really do the internal work. I had already once done partnership and reparent before, but I did them again, and then again once more. Tests started coming through immediately. All of the previous men would text me all on the same day to meet up or tell me they missed me. I verbalized no, and then I blocked them. Then I started having tests with my career come up. Clients who wanted discounts or didn't want to pay for the services. Again, testing my worth and if I would stand in it. I let them go. The universe started rewarding me with little manifestations through money, a free trip to California, my rent being lowered. I'm just going to say on a side note, when does that ever happen? Okay, going back. My busiest month of work. One of my shadows was being afraid to be seen. So I really put myself out there on social media and then opened myself up to dating apps. And then on the 1st of August, I received the most clear ping I've ever heard in my life, and it was to contact the men that I had met back in January. He doesn't live here, so I text him immediately asking if he was planning a trip to my city anytime soon, and everything took off from there. He's everything on my list to a T. The kindest, most thoughtful, expansive partnership I've ever witnessed or been a part of. I then put on my list to manifest a trip out to see him, and within a few days, I received that. But I had to pass the test with my worth again to see if I would set boundaries and be open to being seen. I used two of my friends' marriages as an expander and put any triggers through the DRE. The work actually works, and I am so thankful. So a couple of things I want to highlight in here to anybody doing this work. I think we even, you know, I'm obviously recording this ahead of time before this episode comes out, and we just put out a post on social today about money. And I saw a comment on there of somebody being like, I did opulence back in April. What gives? I'm still in the rock bottom. What I really want to highlight about this and how I approach this work myself, because I do it right alongside you, is you need to rework and go back and rework and do the work again. And you need to take specific things through it once you've done it generally. And so I love that this person highlights that they reworked it because they knew they needed to dig deeper. Sometimes we just scratch the surface. And then where we're at in life can, you know, trigger up a whole new thing. Life's always showing us and guiding us what we need to work on. So going back and doing the work, I love that. I love that this person highlighted that she started to receive, you know, career tests because that's always connected, love and money. So I love that she put that together. This is somebody who really invest in this work, who listens to the podcast, who's probably a part of the Facebook group, because I think that this is where this is from. So I love that, you know, she really is invested and connected those dots because that's a huge correlation with one another. And then I love, love, love that she put any triggers through the daily reprogramming exercise daily. If you want to manifest the big things you're manifesting, you can't just go through something once and be like, where's my thing? You know, that's intellectualizing. That's not actually digging as deeply as you needed to unblock. Have you actually passed the test? Have you stepped out of your shadow to be seen? So thank you to the unblocker that shared this. It highlights so perfectly this formula and the work and effort that has to go into it, as well as the cliffs that need to be jumped off and the tests that have to be passed. And I'm so happy for you. I hope this relationship's going strong and beautifully. Thank you for also sharing the expanders you used. I hope that expands other people of what to take and what to use. Now go ahead and stay till the end of this episode because I'm going to be answering one supported question. Welcome back to the Expanded Podcast. We're here with Helena So, who's a social media director. And I first met you way back when I was cocktailing at the Thirsty Crow with your now husband, then boyfriend, Rahad, who you've just been so inspiring to me because at the time when I met you, you were heading up the social media strategy and everything for PETA.
Wow, that was, I can't believe how long ago that was.
I don't even know, 10 years ago? I don't even know what that would be.
Okay, I guess Rahad and I have been together for 7 years in September.
Wow.
So it must have been like about 6 or 7 years ago because it was like right after I came back to PETA.
Yeah.
I've worked at PETA twice.
So. Oh, yeah, you told me about that.
yeah. I was the director of social media there for a few years and It's a huge part of my identity. I think you can say like you can take the girl out of PETA, but you can't take it.
Absolutely,
because it really changed the way I see the world and how I interact with the world, and definitely, you know, how I consume things and where I put my money and things like that.
So. And I remember when we had lunch once at Botanica when it had just opened.
Yes,
that's like the hip spot in Silver Lake. You had shared with me, but that you were, you know, you understood about animals and you were socially active, but yeah. nothing in comparison to once you went through PETA boot
yeah,
camp.
Yeah. So I had, well, I can, I'll back it up professionally because the way I found PETA was also really crazy. Okay. So after college, I went to Korea to teach English. And then I came back and started working in the music industry, which was like dream job of a lifetime because I've always been such a fan of music. So I got to work with like all my idols and it was just, it was the life, what I thought was the life. And after a while, I was feeling like, oh, you know, there's so many causes I want to contribute to. The environment and animals always resonated strong with me. And so I went on tour with my friend's band as her tour manager or like, you know, selling merch and like doing yeah. assistant stuff. When I came back, I was like, okay, so let's find a job. Yeah. And she was like, oh, I'm going to this PETA holiday party because I did a celebrity thing with them. And do you want to come? And I was like, oh, PETA's really scary and crazy. Like,
which I think is most people's yes. impression and of PETA.
They are very, yes. And I can totally see why it's very intimidating. I mean, I was literally terrified to go to this party.
Yeah.
And I went because I was like, you know, I'm going to meet people who are in this space. Like it's a good thing. So I went and they were showing this video at the end of, like it was the end of the year. So they were showing all the victories they'd had for animals over the year. And I just was so emotional watching it. And I turned to her in the middle of it and I said, oh my God, I just remembered in my fifth grade diary that I wrote, I want to work at PETA when I grow up.
Listen to that.
And she was like, you didn't remember that until just now? And I was like,
I get that though.
I was like, I genuinely didn't. I didn't know who PETA was when I wrote that, but I remember hearing that there was an organization that saved animals wow. or like helped animals. And I wrote that down.
Look
and
at
I,
that
and
manif-
it just, yeah, I know.
Wow, that manifest, you must be a specific manifester.
You know what it is? It's weird because when I was thinking about, you know, just like how I would talk about manifestation in my career, I've been like an accidental manifester.
No, that's what most
what
people say. Once
okay.
they understand the formula, they're
yeah.
like, oh, that's because I've done bits and pieces
bits
of
and
that.
Bits and pieces, but not
yeah.
unintentionally.
Totally.
It's like the music job too, totally. Like, you know, a month before I found that, I was going to go with my best friend to India, Nepal, and Tibet and start a revolution to free Tibetans.
Obviously.
Like,
who
was,
are you?
You know,
an Aries.
Like, yeah,
that's who you are.
We were 21. We thought we have the, we got China in the bag.
Yeah.
We're going to just like change
knock
the
it
world.
Out in a weekend.
Oh, yeah.
yeah.
Like, we're activists. We got this.
Yeah.
And so I ended up getting the music job as a temp job to start. They just like matched me up. And the temp agency, even at that time, they were like, oh, we never get jobs in the music industry, only like film. And I was like, oh, well, I don't want to have anything to do with
yeah, yeah. You're like, I'm good. Yeah.
But I really want music. They're like, oh, well, sorry. You know, we probably won't be able to help you, but thanks for coming in. And the next day they call me. They're like, we just got our first call for the music industry, like ever.
Wow.
And they're like, do you want to go to the studio? And I was like, okay. And I'm thinking it's like a total indie, like, you know, shanty
yeah, yeah.
studio, show up somewhere scary in Hollywood. I'm like, where am I? I knock on the door and I walk in and it's just like beautiful and like platinum records, all like Rolling Stones, Prince,
wow.
Tom Petty, like just everybody I grew up listening to. And so I, you know, I was a 2-week temp and then they were like, do you want the job? And I said, yep, I guess I'm not going to start this revolution.
I'm going to have to pause on
yeah,
that
I'm
going
to have to pause on that. But my friend did.
She did.
She did go. She went to India and to Dharamsala where the Dalai Lama lives and taught English and helped a lot of refugees kind of just figure out their life without paperwork.
Absolutely.
And so I ended up getting to go and visit her, which was amazing. But mm. yeah, like what a different path.
My the dichotomy.
Yeah, if I had gone Whoa. With her. But yeah, so that was like a total accidental, you know, manifestation. And then certainly this, I mean, I didn't even know I wanted to work here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
until
or
I showed up. You
even
know?
Social media, I assume as
oh,
well,
yeah.
right?
Social. So social media kind of just felt like, you know, it was never like, oh, I see this thing and I'm going to go after it. It was like, I was working in the studio. MySpace was
yeah,
getting,
yeah, I remember.
Was huge. And that was yeah. like where musicians were going in the
yeah.
age of like, you know, the music industry was dying. And as far as like the industry.
Totally.
Which,
like Napster killed it,
yes,
all that kind
yes,
of stuff.
So
yeah.
like the labels and, you know, there was just less jobs in it. So at that time, I was helping them like, understand MySpace and get into the indie, you know, industry of LA because
yeah.
that's where it was going. Then with PETA, I started in marketing and kind of like
just shifted into social, partially because there was a need and partially because I was like, whoa, I see effects here. Like, yeah. I see immediate results. I see like how you can reach outside of the audience you Absolutely. Are already talking to. And I think I, like early, I had the awareness that I had this ability to take this message that is thought of as to be like very extreme yeah. and very niche and very like, you know, small community. Yeah. And I felt this calling to like, I can translate this so that the average person can understand and care about it.
Are you a projector in human design? Have you looked it up?
I am a generator.
You seem like a generator.
I'm a generator.
But you have that eye, that transmission.
Yeah. Is that what projectors do? Because Rahat is a projector and he's an actor. So that makes sense.
He feels like such a projector.
Yeah. He's 100% a projector. When
Thank
I looked
God.
It up, I was like, oh.
Yes.
Wow.
And you're giving him all that energy.
Yeah.
But so they have the ability to see systems very easily.
Oh, okay.
Which makes sense that I saw the manifestation system patterning and but so you have that ability to the sight to see how to transmute and speak.
Yeah, I think it's just more like and you know, this goes even back to my childhood. It's like I learned from a very early age growing up as like one of the only Korean kids in an all-white town. Like
you were in Monterey growing
yes,
up?
Yes, Monterey.
Give us that. Let's do this really
okay,
quick.
Cultural upbringing.
But yes, you got it. Listen, you know. Yeah, give us that because we want to hear about that, especially for all the Korean listeners.
So I'm a first generation Korean born. So yeah, that's right. Because my parents immigrated here. So I was born and raised in Monterey, which is... beautiful.
So white.
Yes, but so
and
white.
Rich, yeah.
So white. Yeah. And I didn't know any better, you know? So I grew up, my parents were both very hardworking. They came to the country with nothing.
Wow.
And, you know, my mom didn't speak any, they came from such opposite spectrums. My dad was super independent, like learned English, like he was the youngest in his town to learn English. And he would like go to the army bases just to practice English with
What's
the
his
army?
Sign?
He is a Cancer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And he's just really, his brain is, he's very brilliant. Like he's like a world encyclopedia. You could ask him anything
Absolutely.
And he'll be like, this is what happened. So he was like, fine. He was the first one to listen to Elvis. He was culturally like ready to be here. My mom, on the other hand, like didn't know much English at all. And she had finished nursing school, but when she came, she would hide in the closet whenever she get a call because she didn't want my dad to hear her speaking English.
Oh, the shame.
The shame. Oh. I mean, there was just so much that she had to figure out that I have so much more sympathy for now.
That I'm gonna,
yes.
I mean,
oh,
wow.
My God. And, you know, it wasn't very common, that, especially in that town. There was a very small Korean community and they were pretty tight-knit. So
yeah.
I grew up with that. I grew up, you know, if there were any other Koreans around, they were kind of family.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh yeah, that's how my Iranian family is. They're like family.
Yeah.
Because we were in Modesto. I was between Modesto and where I grew up, Mariposa.
Right.
And Modesto is where the community was. And it's like your family.
Yeah.
That's all you have over
It's all
here.
You have. But it also, I think that's, you know, you hear a lot of Asian American women, I think, being like, oh, you know, I'm not really attracted to like Asian guys. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a lot of society kind of emasculating Asian men mm-hmm. through media and things
Absolutely.
Like that. Like it's very, you know, it's unfortunate. But for me, that wasn't really where it was coming from. It was that every Asian male I met was like my dad, mm-hmm. my brother, my cousin. Like they weren't actually related to me, but I felt like they were that to me.
Yeah,
you know,
family.
Everybody was, my parents, you know, an extension of my parents somehow. So I grew out of that eventually. I grew up. So it was all pretty much white town. I think there was maybe, you know, our school was super small. My graduating class in high school was like 90.
Wow. Mine was like 150 at the most.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're from a small...
Small town and kind of big Bali city. I would do between the both.
Okay.
So I get it. Totally.
Yeah. So I learned from an early age. Well, I actually didn't learn from an early age. I was kind of shooken into it. I was raised speaking Korean. My grandma lived with us, like many Korean families. Your grandma lives with you until you're...
The best.
It's the best. It's there's a reason why it takes a village. You need
really
someone
does.
Else there.
Yes.
Yeah, I spoke Korean first. That was my first language. And my first day of preschool, my dad just dropped me off without speaking a lingo. I didn't speak anything.
No English.
I maybe knew like a few phrases.
Bye,
yeah, like some things from Sesame Street maybe.
Yeah.
So he dropped me off and I cried the entire day. It was, and I, doing the reprogramming work, I see how much that did to me that one day.
Oh yeah, huge.
Because I just cried all day. The teacher, you know, luckily the preschool's in the back of her house. So she brought me into her house and had me sleep in her bed and like just kind of like let me cry there all day. And I think my dad made the decision to kind of just like let me figure it out.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think they said within a week I was speaking English.
And that's how when I taught at a preschool here in town, because it was multicultural, they advised most of the parents for, you know, two languages, only speak whatever the language is at home. Don't speak any English because they'll pick it up within a week, 2 weeks, a month at the most.
Same when I taught English in Korea, they were like, you're not allowed to tell them you speak Korean.
Wow.
In fact, I mean, I they discriminated against me because I am like, I look Korean, and they were like, no, we want someone blonde and like who looks white to speak English because you can't possibly speak it as good as they do. I'm like, I barely speak Korean. What are you talking about?
Yes.
So that was kind of the first time I recognized, oh, like, am I different from some people? Like, you know, because I hadn't been exposed to a lot of other kids. Maybe, you know, like my parents' friends' kids. So it was still like, I felt like, oh, they all look like me. They have families like me. Mm-hmm. But that preschool was the first jolt. And I think after, like, I quickly learned how to assimilate and be liked. As like, you know, I'm very observant. And I think that was born, I was born with that gift is like, oh, I see that happening to Sally over there, and Sally's very like, so I can do that, and I can do that better.
Yeah. You're like, I got this.
This. And I remember like observing things like that as a preschooler. And I think the second time I recognized that I was different was I was at Mervyn's. Remember Mervyn's?
I totally had Mervyn's growing up. JCPenney's and Mervyn's, 100%. Yeah.
And we're in like my mom and I had separated like in this shoe department for a second. This boy like jumped around the corner and he just like stands in front of me. And I was like, hi. And he goes, Chinese, Japanese, Chinese, with his eyes. And I was like, wait, is he talking to me? I'm not Chinese or Japanese. I remember just not understanding what he was saying. I was like, oh my God, it's because I look like this and he looks like that. And I think I was maybe five. So it had to have been like only 2 years after preschool that I was like, oh, there's another, like, I'm different. And, you know, and then after that, there was like progressive, like we had this kind of bully down the street. He would come and like torment my brother and like say racist things.
Kids are assholes, really.
And also, I just wonder now looking back, I'm like, did your parents know that you spewed that
or
kind of stuff?
Or where it may have come from. It's not their fault.
But it's, you know, shows how prevalent it is.
The epidemic.
You know, Asians actually have it like a little easier in many respects.
Oh, beyond,
You know, but even me, I'm like me and my brother as kids, we were getting that. So I had definite like marks in my memory of like, moments of realizing that I was different and that, you know, I felt like I had to try harder to be liked.
Yeah.
And then you couple that with anybody who's grown up in a Korean family knows like the parental pressure.
Oh, beyond all of the Asian women, especially that I've worked with, that's most of the deprogramming.
Of course. I know. And I'm so sure of it. And I think with every culture, there's like different levels of reprogramming. I mean,
especially Middle Eastern as well.
Middle Eastern and cultures that are just still, you know, I mean, many cultures are oppressed, but you know, the levels of oppression, it's like, there's like generations of reprogramming that needs to happen. It's
ancestral.
Like you can't even just take care of your own like last 20 years.
Totally.
Like, you think about your parents and then your grandparents and what they went through. But I think the I was very aware of like we are a Korean family in this white town. But meanwhile, my parents were like, okay, you have all the same pressures though as if we were in Korea.
Yes.
So get on board. But you know, in retrospect, I do think that they were very much more open-minded, or I thought that they were when I was younger, than most Korean parents. My dad spoke English at home, which is like Most Korean parents is like, you know, if you spoke English at home, you get smack up the head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
And my mom was extremely social. So she was always having like hobbies. And like, you know, at the hospital, she became the most popular nurse. She always had friends. And then she became a golfer. And she like, you know, went into
every... Because Korean golfing is a thing. Huge, right?
Huge. Yeah. And my mom is so social. She's a magnetic person.
Like, is she a Leo?
She's a Scorpio.
Scorpio. You're the Brandon Aries.
I know.
Wow.
Yeah, she's a Scorpio. Always been a big people pleaser. And so I feel like, you know, from her, I really learned a lot of things. Like controlling what people see was extremely important to her. Mm-hmm. And I learned that it's okay to lie sometimes if you don't want someone to see something or if you want them to think a certain way to protect them.
The shadow.
Oh, so much. Yeah. And I'm still like catch myself saying things. I'm like, wait, I didn't need to say that's not actually true.
I do
like,
that
don't
too.
Make someone feel comfortable. Just tell them what it is, you know? I still find myself doing that. But yeah, there's a lot of that. And, you know, but I also learned how to, you know, be social. Like she shows up somewhere and everyone's like, oh, DJ's here. Yeah, let's have more DJ around, you know?
Yeah.
So I learned a lot of, I think, just how to like deal with that without, you know, kind of getting angry or feeling victimized. I'm just like, okay, well, you know, let me be your friend. Mm-hmm. Like I got this. Mm-hmm. But yeah, with that came with a lot of shadow. I very much grew up like whenever I used to yell at my parents for speaking Korean to me in front of anyone. Mm. I was like, do not ever do that again.
Wow.
You know, I just wanted to be like the other girls.
You
at
just
school.
Wanted to feel normal.
I just
or
wanted
whatever
to be,
that is.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would come home and my mom would have made like this beautiful Korean meal.
If I could be there now.
I know. I know.
The kimchi.
All my friends I grew up with, they're like, you never let us stay over for food because you were always like hiding the Korean food. And I was like, I know, I'm so sorry. I just wanted her to make like chicken nuggets and spaghetti
macaroni and
like
cheese.
Everybody else's family, you know? And now I'm like, would kill for that home cooked food. But yeah, so I even remember like one time someone came over and we had a huge jar of kimchi in the fridge. And he was like, what is that, lamb guts? And I was so ashamed that every time someone came over, I would hide the kimchi in our house. Mm-hmm. I would hide everything in the fridge that looked foreign. Mm-hmm. I would just, it was like my safety. I was like, protect what they see. I would like even want my mom to get rid of some of our like Korean like paintings and stuff. And it was like, I became just such a control freak and like trying to appear like everybody else.
Yep.
The amount of energy I put into that as a child is probably ridiculous.
It's heartbreaking. And
it's
interesting because most children in some degree do this. Like we all try to do something
our
to normalize
own version. Yeah.
Or be typical. And that it's just heartbreaking because so much of this work is about undoing that.
I know.
And it's so sad. It's just what society creates and it's heartbreaking.
Yeah. And it becomes your reality because I just don't know what else to compare to the feeling of shame from Korean parents. You know, like, especially because our parents' generation, they lived through a war.
Oh my gosh.
So them coming here means this is for us.
Yeah.
Like, and this is for us to have the life that they envision.
Yeah.
And so I can, you know, you can tell, you know, most Korean parents are blue in the face that this is what you want and you're feeling fulfilled and you're feeling happy and there's nothing else you could ask for. And they're still like, okay, but why don't you make this much amount of money? Like, why don't you have a, you know, house in the suburbs? Yeah. Why don't you have, you know, why don't I recognize anything you're talking about?
Yeah, totally. All of my Iranian family was like that too.
Yeah.
Like when my cousin finally said he wanted to be a vet.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, pre-med, valedictorian. His dad was like, like you're on track to be a doctor and a surgeon, you know, and there is that. There's always that pressure.
It's incredible. I mean, it's just you're carrying their dreams.
I know.
And you know what they've been through. I mean, my mom was shot in the back when she was 2 years old by a U.S. bullet.
And they thought
she was dead for 4 days. I mean, you know, so lost her dad. My grandma who helped raise me, she had like a scar in her arm where she was carrying my mom that the bullet went through. And her arm was paralyzed like this, like the whole time I knew. So I remember as a kid like playing with her hand because I liked that it never moved.
Yeah.
It was this weird like phenomenon.
Yeah.
So I'd always like grab the skin on. Very weird. But yeah, like I grew up knowing that part of my family history. Like I didn't have a grandpa because he, you know, the US government thought he worked for North Korea. So they took him and he never came back. Then his last words were for them to get somewhere safe. So my grandma tried to get them somewhere safe. And while fleeing, my mom, the bullet went through her arm to my mom's back. And my uncle, her older brother thought, oh, you know, they thought she was dead, but they carried her anyway for 3 days.
Thank God.
And she survived.
Thank God.
I know.
It's insanity. And we're like at Mervyn's being made fun of. It's so hard. It is absolutely. And she must be the strongest.
She
woman.
Really is. I mean, I don't even think she realizes how strong she is. Yeah, she's my beacon.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I've never been more appreciative of her than I am at this like stage in my life. And I think that's only going to grow as I get older because there was so much resentment for so long for being Korean that I just projected on my parents. I'm like, you know what? My parents are fucking awesome.
They're awesome. Korean. Being Korean's amazing.
I know. I'm so proud of that now.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, you know, I had that growing up. And then in middle school, my parents got divorced.
Whoa.
Which is
so uncommon.
Very uncommon, especially at that time. I think it's probably more common now.
Yeah.
But at that time, I mean, Korean people just didn't get divorced in Korea or here.
Wow.
And then especially in this tiny knit Korean community, we were so gossiped about. You know, I do believe that my mom stayed with my dad, you know, for us. Mm-hmm. I don't think that she, looking at them now, I'm like, I don't know how you guys were together for so long. I really wish that she had like not sacrificed so much time for us because I'm, but you know, that was a pretty traumatizing experience because it was in middle school and my dad did not take it well and kind of brought the kids into it.
So
and,
she initiated. She was ready.
Well, basically I came home and my dad was like, pulled me out of the house and he's like, we have to talk. And he basically told me that my mom had cheated on him.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I, you know, at that time I was like, how could this, it's okay. How could this have happened? And like, but looking back, I'm, you know, and I'm not speaking, I'm not condoning infidelity or anything, but I totally sympathize with where she was coming from. And she's still with my stepdad. They're not technically married, but you know, 20 some years later, I don't know.
So they were in love.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And I do. And now seeing my stepmom and my dad, like everybody's found a partner.
Totally.
This is how it was supposed to be.
Totally.
It didn't need to be so painful, I guess, the whole process. But yeah, I that also brought a ton of shame because now we were like this ostracized Korean family. I remember going to restaurants and if we were there and someone we knew showed up, I could see them like, I kind of be like, oh, there's the So family. Like those poor kids.
Oh,
and gosh. Oh God. And I'm like, you know what? My mom is great.
Yeah.
And like, inspiring
to be able to go against the grain like that. I mean, incredibly inspiring.
I mean, I honestly don't think she would have chosen to, given the way that she's such a safe person. I think that was probably her worst nightmare.
Oh,
I'm
sure.
To be seen as this, you know, like Korean, like, you know,
unfaithful
woman that, you know, and just, but I, you know, I'm sad that my dad got hurt the way that he did, but for both of their sake, I am so glad that something happened because they are so much better off now.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there was a lot of a lot of self-consciousness growing up.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a lot of what I've been reprogramming.
Yeah, when you're in the work, how is that going for you? Like actually looking at all of this stuff.
It's funny. A lot of times I just question if that's like the memory I'm supposed to pull up.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big shadow for me is I judge everything. I judge myself.
So perfectionism.
I judge my thoughts. I judge my reactions.
Mm-hmm.
And so I pull stuff up and I'm like, wait, that couldn't have meant that much.
Mm, no, it does.
And
oh,
then
yeah.
It does.
Yeah.
Like that first day of preschool. I'm like, no,
huge.
I've processed that. Like, I know what happened. I know what should have happened. And I was like, oh, shit.
It's still there.
I don't know how that affects like how I eat my breakfast in the morning or like what I choose to do with my life.
Totally.
So yeah, it's been really interesting. I think the biggest thing for me, reparent was huge, which I'm sure a lot of your Korean, if you have other Korean clients.
Yeah.
That has
or
been,
anyone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
I mean, obviously anyone. But, yeah. But I think in the shame factor and then like, you know, it's really helped me kind of understand that my parents don't really need to understand my passions in life.
Totally.
And how I'm, you know, living them mm-hmm. For me to be happy with them.
That's
and,
great. That's huge.
Yeah. And I'm still working on it, but it's like the conclusion I'm trying to really
come to.
Yes. Amazing. And have in my heart. So.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that. Well, also, for the person who's sitting there at home, who's like, because we see this in the Facebook group all the time.
Yeah.
People are really intrigued. They want to work for an NGO. They want to start an NGO. They're, but it's the financial aspect that really burdens them.
Mm-hmm.
How did you find that for the process? Because you accomplished so much while you were at PETA. Yeah. I even remember seeing you at one point and you had like kicked off the craziest social media strategy for the Super Bowl 1 year.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It like took off and went viral.
Yeah, yeah.
So tell us about that.
Yeah. So, you know, it's, I will say that working at a nonprofit can be extremely expansive, especially one like PETA. Again, there's so much out there with PETA. So I don't know what anyone listening has heard or hasn't heard about PETA. You know, some of it's true. There's a lot of misinformation out there as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say that as an organization, they are a fascinating place to learn mm-hmm. because they are working to help end animal suffering in every industry.
Mm-hmm.
So I inherently learned about so many things, the fashion industry, mm-hmm. science, the food industry,
beauty,
media, how media works. You know, just working with various celebrities and people who have platforms and how, you know, powerful that is.
Mm-hmm.
Legal things. I mean, there's just so much, such a wide spectrum of worlds that I learned about and working in this one place. And you wouldn't really think that because you're like, oh, you learn about animals.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, no, I learned so many skills
totally.
There.
Totally.
Yeah, actually, one of the senior vice presidents, she does a media training. She's the one who's often interviewed on like, say, Jon Stewart or Larry mm-hmm. King or, you know, someone wanted to have. And she, that exercise, I mean, I never ended up doing a ton of media interviews for PETA mm-hmm. anyway, but just going through that training was like life training and communication.
Oh, I can't even imagine. For public speaking.
Oh my God, for public speaking, for such a controversial topic.
Oh, yeah.
And for like, you know, we're getting prepared to go into like
war. War.
Yes,
an interview.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, for a nonprofit who, you know, kind of relies on free publicity, like you got to make sure that you get your point across no matter what they're asking, you know?
In a way that can be heard.
In a way that can be heard and that still answers the question and you still hold that confidence. So that was a huge, you know, I absorbed so much knowledge and I really felt like I built something and the emotional investment was like unparalleled.
Mm-hmm.
Like I still am like rooting them on when I see them have victories and I'm still heartbroken when I see, you know, things that they uncover. But it working for a nonprofit is one of the most gratifying experiences that I had.
Mm-hmm.
And I highly recommend if anyone's curious to just try it. Just jump off the cliff. I'm a big cliff jumper.
Yeah, you are. Aries. Yeah, she's got that.
So I always am going to advise you to just do it and like see where the chips fall.
Yeah.
You know, but as far as like the financial aspect, you know, there's such a wide spectrum there too. PETA is very reserved. I mean, they really do a good job of like making sure their money is spent on the animals.
Mm-hmm.
I think it can lead to some employees feeling like, okay, well, I'm also working really hard.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's such a spectrum. Like, you know, for example, I think Greenpeace and some other big ones, they're not as reserved mm-hmm. maybe with their employees. And I think there's, you know, different models that work for every one of them.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, the way I made it work was I had a really successful job in the music industry and I was so hungry for that emotional fulfillment
mm-hmm.
and for feeling my impact in the world. That once I got that, it was like, that was kind of the salary I needed.
Yeah, totally. That was the exchange.
Yes.
That felt
and for anyone who's like worried about, you know, can I afford it? Like you will figure it out. If
mm-hmm.
it's something that your heart wants to do, you'll figure it out. You might do a little consulting on the side.
Yeah,
you might have a side job or you might just stick it out and be like, you know what? I'm going to downgrade a few things in my life because this work is important to mm-hmm. me. And maybe I'll just know it's temporary.
Yeah.
You know?
Great. I love that expansion and option. That yeah. this doesn't have to be forever.
Yeah, it definitely does. And for some people, it will be. Yeah. Like, I know plenty of people who are like, yeah, this is it. This is my purpose. This is my life. I do think that helping ending animal suffering is my, you know, part of my purpose. It's just going to take shape in different ways.
Totally.
Yeah.
What would you say? Because you shared with me at lunch too, fantastic tips and facts. If you were to give, let's say, five of the biggest, the easiest,
impactful,
yeah. like accessible things a person can do right now to help the environment and animals.
Okay. Yeah.
Even if you still, like I would told you at the time, I was like, I medicinally have to eat meat, but I do as little as I have
yeah.
to. And you had wonderful tips.
Yes, that has, okay. So I guess the number one tip for diet is I think people get intimidated by, oh, like labels, vegan or, you know, pescatarian, vegetarian. But what I think people don't realize, you know, is there's no time to worry about those labels.
Yeah.
Like as far as animal suffering and the environment suffering from animal agriculture is going, every meal does make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you are cutting back, that is making a huge difference. Every time you sit down for a meal, you're voting with mm-hmm. your dollar. And I don't care if you're buying from a, you know, so-called humane farm, mm-hmm. whatever it is, you're paying for something
yep.
when you sit down.
Yeah.
And so the more that you are paying for plants,
mm-hmm. totally.
The more that you are paying for plant-based things, that affects everything. And it's not just animals mm-hmm. or the environment, but it's human rights.
Mm-hmm.
It's so many things are tied into that I don't think people realize the impact that one meal can
water.
Have.
Water, which is environment. But yeah,
I mean, you know, and I think for the biggest thing for diet is like environmentalists, like, heads up, you know, this is one of the top three contributors to climate change.
Mm-hmm.
If you've seen Cowspiracy on Netflix, it kind of exposes all these different environmental groups who kind of didn't want to say that for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
They were like, oh, you know, for example, you see a lot of media about plastic straws right now,
mm-hmm.
right? Plastic. Well, guess what makes up more than half of that plastic island? It's fishing gear.
Yeah.
It's fishing nets.
Yeah.
We're killing the ocean because of our need for sushi.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's, you know, if you can't give it up, like every meal that you sit down for does make that difference.
Totally.
It does pay for less of that to happen and for it to happen, you know, because we're in a time crunch.
Yeah, time ticking. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
So I guess that would be for diet. For companion animals, just please, please, please adopt.
Yeah. I'm huge.
I
on
love that
yeah.
you talk about Barley being a rescue
yeah.
because, you know, people are so, there's so many misconceptions about mm-hmm. purebreds and mixed breeds or even shelters. And the fact of the matter is we're in a home, overpopulation crisis.
Totally.
Crisis,
mm-hmm.
you know, and if you've been to shelters and you've seen these animals living in jail cells for doing nothing wrong but existing.
Yeah.
And you know,
and being killed.
Yes,
most often they kill shelters.
Yes,
yeah.
You know, half of them are euthanized because there aren't enough homes. And I don't blame any of those shelters for having to do that.
No, yeah, it's an overpopulation.
It's overpopulation. Yeah. And, you know, I do believe that, you know, people inherently would do the right thing if they just could see the effects of it.
Yeah.
But they're so far removed from that and they don't see the harm in buying one dog,
mm-hmm.
what that does.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's just like, oh, well, this dog needs a home too. Yes, that dog does need a home. But that one dog, that one life just took one life away
mm-hmm.
from the shelter. And
mm-hmm.
that is how it works. Mm-hmm. Whether you like see that connection or not, just by numbers, that's how it works.
And again, it's like voting with your dollar. When we
yes.
stop doing that,
yes.
the resources run dry
yes.
on that.
Yes, humans are responsible for this overpopulation crisis.
Mm-hmm.
We need to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that is by adopting and also spaying and neutering.
That's like, the biggest, too.
Yeah. It's like so many people are like, oh, it's such a natural thing. It's like, we can't afford it, though, right now. Like, you know, unfortunately, we've domesticated these animals.
Totally.
We've exploited them. We can't, you know, I mean, French bulldogs can't even mate
naturally. Without human intervention.
Yeah. I mean, like, they're adorable. Don't get me wrong. But that's not really natural.
Yeah, like totally. For
you know,
the person looking at like a holistic perspective,
yes,
too, it really
yes.
isn't.
They can't give birth naturally. They have to do C-sections. I mean, like what kind of dog can't give, you know?
Yeah.
It's really sad.
Yeah.
So I'm not trying to harp on anyone. If
mm-hmm.
you have a French, like I love French bulldogs. Yeah. They're adorable. I'm just saying, if you have...
If you're waking up today yes. and you're like, I can't actually go work for a nonprofit, yes. so I want to do something in this space
yes.
that provides impact. These are tools.
Yeah, and I have plenty of friends who bought a dog and now they rescue. You know, it's just about like knowing what's out there and what the situation is.
The weirdest thing is both rescues I've ended up with, because they all fall into my lap.
Yeah.
They both ended up being pure breeds, which is another case. I thought I was getting a mutt.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that's actually a really great thing you're bringing up is, you know, I want to tell everyone, you can find whatever breed you want.
Oh, you totally can.
I promise. It doesn't matter what it is, you can find them as a rescue.
Totally. Yeah. We were in Ireland and we're like, should we adopt a dog here? Yeah. And then we're sitting there and we're looking at all of like the fosters and rescues at this restaurant. Yeah. And they're all my favorite, like wolfhounds and all these things. And then I was like, oh, fuck, we can't do that. This poor dog, we can't like stick it on a plane for 10 hours. The trauma. Like,
oh my God, after leaving the shelter.
God, no. Yeah, we got with it. But you can really find anything you want.
Yes, you really can. And there are so many different purebred rescue groups now, because so many of these, like, you know, pug rescues. Yes, they understand the needs. So, yeah, let's see what else. How many get tips is that? Two?
Two or three. Spay, neuter.
Clothing. I mean, okay, I understand diet is, you know, talk about needing, you know, as far as diet, I understand why that will take a long time for people to kind of get on board with. And again, just incorporating more. I'm not saying give up everything. If you can. Yes, if you can. But talk about, like, you know, if we can reprogram, you know, our childhoods and our shadows and our upbringing, we can certainly program like what we put into our body as far as what we see as food, what we consider food. And for me, it came naturally because once I started working at PETA, I saw process.
Mm-hmm.
And that's same with how I see clothes. Like, you know, somebody might just see, oh, that's a nice leather purse. Mm-hmm. Like, there are 1,000 leather goods out there. And I see like all the process of making that one piece of leather and then all the effects of it afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, to me, it's not like, oh, I'm not going to buy that because I want to be this ethical person. I just don't want to buy that because I see what it's gone through and what it's going to do.
Even chemically, it's absolutely horrific.
Yes.
And then that all sinks into our body. I mean, on many levels, it's destructive for the environment, the animal, and ourselves.
Yeah. And I think the common misconception is like if they hear someone like me who worked for PETA, you know, someone saying, oh, you shouldn't wear that. It's like, oh, well, you just don't think animals should be used for anything. And I'm like, actually, if you've seen that meme that everyone posts, a lot of people, like, I feel like in our community posts, it's like the silhouette of a human with all these animals. And it says ego and the humans at the top. And then the other one says eco and the human with all the animals is just like in the middle with all of them.
Yeah.
And I truly believe the animals are here like with us, not for us.
Mm-hmm.
And they are telling us all the time that they experience all the same emotions.
Oh, they totally
do.
Science backs it up.
And so if we
were pigs, Jesus.
Pigs.
I mean, Jesus.
My favorite.
I know.
I mean, they're smarter than dogs. They're smarter than 3-year-old children. They can play video games.
It's crazy.
You know, and so I think that's what I mean by reprogramming how we see the animals that are being used, which, you know, I understand the attachment to foods. And I mean, I grew up Korean. I ate every part of every animal growing up. And so I understand the attachment and, you know, and also like the things that make you feel good when you wear them. But just peeling back the label a bit, because, you know, society and these huge corporations pay a lot of money for you not to see the process.
Totally.
The reprogramming for me meant peeling back that label really harshly and being like completely dumbfounded.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for clothing, you know, leather, and, you know, I know there's like a huge debate out there with like eco, in the eco fashion world about like, oh, well, vegan materials are just as bad. And it's just not true when you factor in everything.
All of the things.
Yes. Yeah. Because the amount of water, the amount of chromium that's used, it's, you know, leather, I think, is the top 5 contributor to pollution right now.
Wow.
It's really insane. Another documentary I'll recommend is The True Cost, which is all about the fashion industry. And it's not necessarily animal focused, but just
what goes into fashion, that label that you're buying. Yeah.
So, you know, kind of staying away from fast fashion if possible is good. But also what people don't realize is, you know, it's not just fur, you know, which obviously people are more aware of now, but, you know, leather also wool. I don't think people know that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm such a wool consumer.
Mostly
vintage. I don't know if that's any better.
I mean, it technically, you know, it exists if you're not buying it new. But, yeah. You know, and I think, you know, there's a lot, you know, Stella McCartney has her own sheep.
Yeah.
So she's all vegan except for her wool that she does from her own sheep. But what most people don't realize is, you know, PETA has done exposés, I think, on like 5 continents of the world's top wool exporters. Ugh. And it was some of the most horrific things I've ever seen. I won't really get into all the graphics, but if you've ever seen any fur footage, it was just as bad.
Oh my God.
It's really, really horrendous. The shearers get paid by the volume. So they, you know, they don't care if they cut and they will make a sheep docile no matter what they need to do if the sheep is screaming in pain. Mm-hmm. So just being aware, I guess, of there's so many more sustainable options out there now. I mean, there are new vegan lines coming out all the time. And if there aren't vegan lines, there are lines that are making a vegan line within their
totally,
line.
Yeah, an eco line.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, progress, not perfection. Yeah. Like I understand, like I know some of the vegan clothes I have, they may not be completely, you know, eco sound, but I'm trying my best. I also have been trying not to buy anything new.
Yeah.
I've been trying to buy almost everything thrifted and vintage. So that's helpful. And, you know, again, it's hard. I have a lot of friends calling me, asking me like, I'm having a hard time finding shoes. I'm having a hard time. And it's like, that means so much that they're even trying. And I think that's what I want to tell people is that, you know, don't be worried. You know, people are often worried about, oh, once I start doing something, if I fall off, I'm going to get shamed. And it's like, if you really want to do this for the right reasons, and that's to have an impact on animal suffering and the environment, just do as much as you can.
Yeah.
Try.
Yeah.
Try. And I do believe it's like a reprogramming thing. I mean, we've been programmed. And, you know, I love learning from my ancestors and like learning from our past. But there's a ton of stuff that we've done for, you know, since the beginning of time, that's, we can evolve.
Yeah, like, that's not good.
Yes. You know, there's some things, like I understand ancient traditions you want to hold on to.
Totally.
But there's an evolution in consciousness going. And I do believe that involves understanding how we live with our fellow creatures.
Totally.
Who inherently embody so many of the things that humans are trying to get back to.
Totally.
You know, it's like barley when...
when she wants
a smoothie, she's like, I know I want that smoothie. Yeah. I don't have shame for wanting that smoothie. So I want that smoothie because I want that smoothie.
She understands manipulation really well too.
So that's something we shouldn't learn from you.
Not manipulation, but I like the no ego in a lot of ways.
Yes. And like, you know, for example, one of my friends used this really great terminology. She's like, when you watch a deer and like, the deer just knows what it's supposed to do.
It's supposed to eat medicine.
Yeah,
everything.
Where it's supposed to go. It's not worried about dying. It's not worried
time
about
and space.
What someone's thinking. It's just living. And like, aren't we all trying to kind of
to be present?
Go back to that, or you know, find that whole authentic self in ourselves. And animals just are that without trying. And so, I think there's so much we can learn from that. And I think if the average person were to really sit down and look at the sheer number of animals that are suffering at the hands of vanity, really. It's just like a jacket
delicacy
you put on, you know, and like it keeps you warm, but that other animal is now like not cold because it's dead.
Yeah.
It's like there are other ways to stay warm. There are other ways to feel fashionable. Mm-hmm. And so, I'd say, you know, clothing is number 3.
Mm-hmm.
Just to be aware, you know, read your labels. People also don't know about down.
Mm-hmm. How that's huge. Yeah, we don't even mess with that, man. That's one of my biggest. That's one thing I have
really
made a difference
okay,
in,
that's
in my
great
life. Yeah, huge. Like the bedding at the house, like no way.
Wow.
It's all alternative.
Yeah,
everything.
That's really great. Yeah, because that's, I think, probably the last on people's list that they think is a bad thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, and then beauty.
Yeah,
you know,
huge.
Watching the
testing.
Yes, the beauty products you buy. I'd say, you know,
that's like one of the most accessible changes somebody could make right now, too. It's like quite easy in the world to go and find the label that says
yes,
no,
and there's
testing.
So many resources online to double check that.
Yeah, is it EWG.org?
I trusted the PETA website.
Oh, they have one.
Yes, they
great
have a database. I trusted it because what happens is a lot of these companies do go cruelty-free in the US, but the minute they start selling in China, China requires animal tests for their products to be sold there. So I think Maybelline might be one of them. Mm. They are technically cruelty-free here, but they pay for tests in China to sell their products. So they're not cruelty-free, yeah. even though they'll say it all over their stuff.
Yeah, it's not 100%.
So yeah, that's why I kind of trust like just, you know, maybe double check several sites. Yeah. I think there's a... That you can Google them. There are just so many.
And man,
now.
The hippier you go, the more you're going to find all the things you need.
Like, I know. Honestly. And honestly, I think a lot of your listeners probably use a lot of cruelty-free products totally. Already just yeah. because, you know, the like I see the products that you recommend and most of those are super natural and there's no reason to test them anyway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like all the living libations.
Yes.
Stuff,
I mean, that's, isn't that like, yeah. And I mean, I love... plant medicine yeah. for skin, for hair, everything. So I'm a big proponent of that. But if you're going to do these bigger brands, just be aware, conscious consumer that way.
And there are chic ways to go. I mean, they still might not be the most environmentally friendly, but going yeah. like, you know, linens, flax.
Yes,
you know, if you,
totally.
If you roll that way, cotton, you yeah. know, still again, you're going to be dealing with dyes and things like that.
Yeah.
But honestly, like even older brother Max's brand, like you can... bury that in your backyard. And
wow.
it is all like the cleanest and yeah. cleanest of stuff.
Cotton. Thank
yeah.
goodness for cotton.
Thank goodness for cotton. Even though there's so much wrong with that
yes.
environmentally.
Yes.
But it's still, there are chic ways to yeah. go down this route.
I love that he uses only natural dyes. That's
Isn't
that's
amazing?
Wonderful. It's, yeah.
They,
I gotta check out his shop.
It's incredible. They're shut down for 2 weeks because they're doing their whole like new spring installation.
Oh, okay.
Coming soon.
Awesome.
But it'll be back up in 2 weeks.
Awesome. Yeah. yeah. So... let's see. I have five. Am I on five now?
I don't even remember.
I
yeah.
don't either.
Those
I guess,
are good ones.
I
though.
Guess the fifth one would just be like, you know, entertainment.
Yeah.
Like people don't realize how much
Subliminal.
Animals suffer for entertainment.
Yeah.
Like when you see a lion on a set, it doesn't matter what it says. No animals were harmed in the making of this film. That animal, they don't monitor what happens off camera,
yeah.
off set. And no animal... that's that wild is really supposed
Trained,
to be
yeah.
living in captivity or mm-hmm. on a movie set.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why there's so many stories of them lashing out. And same with zoos. You hear about animals escaping every chance they get.
Totally.
Or someone comes in their enclosure and they attack. You know, they're being driven crazy because they're not walking 100 miles a
yeah,
day.
Totally.
And they're not raising their kids.
Yeah.
And so yeah, I think, you know, it's so easy for people to, you know, think, oh, especially moms, like my kids are going to the zoo. Like
yeah,
I
man,
may
I
feel weird
that.
About that, but I'm just going to go. Mm-hmm. And it's like, when you go and you look in the animal's face, like, do you see joy?
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you see
Marie
pain?
Kondo.
Yes, Marie Kondo.
Zoo's not joy.
Exactly.
No.
yeah.
No.
So yeah, I'd say those are the five areas, you know, they're the areas that animals are suffering the most. And that's yeah. where you can have the immediate impact. And
your dollars do vote every time.
And your dollars yeah. do vote. And I'm not claiming to be perfect.
Me neither, man.
I don't want to
You
come
see my
off.
Shoes lined up there, my purse over there. Fashion's my worst, of course.
It's hard, you know. Yeah. Everybody has their kind of like, oh, I can't give that up yet. And so I really try to be selective on who I approach. And I always kind of wait for someone to ask because I never want to come
yeah.
off as being like preachy. But I also want people to feel comfortable to know that any progress is amazing progress.
Yeah, and you have choice.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
If you want to, if you're feeling interested.
Yes.
In
and
really
if I were
it.
To like meet you sometime after this podcast, I'm no way going to
yeah, yeah,
judge you
ever. Yeah, totally. And that is the way to actually, I think,
yeah.
see a shift in the world.
Yeah.
Is just giving that invite for change if
totally.
Anybody's interested.
And
yeah.
I think that was a big reason I felt the need to like go leave the animal rights world is... You know, they are so effective and they go about it in so many different ways. But I really wanted to come from a place that felt like it was more my genuine, like, channel to communicate this information, you know,
Absolutely.
To the average person.
Barley's tuning into this. She knows there's an animal lover
oh,
here
yeah.
and me. So she's taking full advantage of this taping if you can't hear her.
Oh, yeah. She just gave me a kiss.
Yeah. See, we apologize.
So I'm quickly interrupting this episode to invite you, if you're ready to start your manifestation journey, or if anything you've heard in our manifestation episodes has piqued your interest to begin, we have a la carte workshops in everything from the basics bundle, which is what we recommend to everyone who starts. It's the formula that actually teaches you how to manifest, unblocked inner child, and unblocked shadow. We also have a la carte workshops on love and money.
But the real gem is the Pathway membership because it encompasses every single workshop we have. It's a year-long membership with full access to the few a la carte offerings we have and exclusive workshops not available anywhere else, such as the daily practice, which is what everybody in the Pathway uses, hopefully at least 3 times a week to daily in order to truly create the new neural pathways that one needs in order to manifest, and houses the library of our deep imaginings, which is our unique hypnosis process that allows you to get into your subconscious and overwrite those old neural pathways, creating the new ones. You can use our special code EXPANDED, all caps, EXPANDED, to receive $20 off your first a la carte workshop purchase or $20 off your first month of the Pathway. Again, that's all caps, EXPANDED, EXPANDED. Okay, now back to the episode.
Let's pivot into the social media world. I want you to be an expander there, and I want you to be an expander in your relationship too, which I think is
okay,
really special.
Yeah.
Tell us, for the person who's out there and they want to get into social media, mm-hmm. social media directing, what does that actually entail? Because I've had a lot of people that are like, I'm going to be a brand consultant. You know, then they get there and they're like, fuck, this is a lot of work.
It's a lot.
You need a lot of strategy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or trends even in social media you're seeing, like that kind of stuff is helpful.
So, it's so funny because I can talk about trends right now, and when this comes out, it might have already changed.
Isn't that crazy?
It's just
that's
such
how quick
a fast-changing world. I will say, because I feel like you probably have a lot of small business owners.
Totally.
And I will just say, you know I've seen a lot of people posting on Instagram, like, you know, the algorithm is making it so that you can't see my posts. Please turn on post notifications mm-hmm. or like this post to fix that. And I'm just here to tell you that that doesn't fix anything.
Mm-hmm. I'm always turned off by that.
Yes. And my heart just hurts a little bit because I'm like, oh gosh, that's not helping you.
That's not the way to do
it. And I'm sure that took some bravery for you to ask for that help, and it's not even going to do anything mm-hmm. because it is so much about consistency. Mm-hmm. You need that engagement every time. So, a lot of the things that you read about, you really should follow. So there is a best time to post. There mm-hmm. are optimal times to post, and that will help your algorithm. And like making, you know, giving a variety of content. But there's just, I don't even know which tip to go with.
Yeah.
It's
a beast.
It's a science.
Yeah, it's an art.
It's a science, but at the same time, it's a complete non-science because anything could happen. And
any
you have
moment.
No idea that something could blow up.
Yeah.
But, you know, I would say, you know, for the person who, it's very overwhelming. I would say, you know, stick to the one platform that you want to focus on and feel like you really get a handle on that. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's very overwhelming because you're like, oh, I got to start Instagram and I got a Facebook and I did do Twitter. It's like, what is your business?
Totally.
Where does that live? I mean, mm-hmm. for a lot of people, that's Instagram.
Yeah.
So I get that.
Yeah.
But especially if you have a lot of video content, like that's, Facebook is your best friend. Mm-hmm. If you are involved in news and you want to get more into like the conversation of like what's
Twitter.
Happening, Twitter is where you want to be.
Even us, we were like, we look every month at our analytics and we go, where can we cut the fat? We had, mm-hmm. we were doing even for these podcasts, for instance, we were doing like a whole YouTube video that Lila was cutting. And you know, like for a podcast episode, I mean, it varies between, we get like 15,000 downloads a weekend to, I don't know, so maybe when it was good was 20,000. I don't know. Lila sees it. But to give you perspective, the views on YouTube are like 400. We're like, fuck it, that's gone.
Yeah,
like we cut all the fat. We don't have a Twitter anymore. We don't have a Facebook. That's, we have a Facebook group.
Yeah, I think that makes perfect sense for you guys. You guys are killing it on Instagram.
I just think
it's great.
All Lila and Kate and Grace are doing so great.
Yeah. I guess the other advice I could give you is like when there's a new feature, use it. Be the person that's the first person to hop on the new
filter
way of Instagram stories or, you know, it sounds so superficial.
No, but it's a game. You have to play it.
It is the way to do it, not only to kind of, you know, you show that you're like, you know, paying attention, but also for you to get familiar. Like the faster you start using, the faster you're going to
and get more engagement.
Feel more familiar with it.
Yeah.
But I don't even know how else to like
position
tips because I'm so much better at answering specific questions.
Yeah, sure.
You know, because it's
totally.
Just like, It's such a massive
I think
piece.
That was such a great tip in itself, yeah. to stick with the platform that drives whatever your content yes. is supposed to be and whatever you're trying to market. Because that's essentially yeah. at the end of the day, it's an educational resource is what yeah. social media is, as well as marketing. It's your yeah. own sort of PR little platform, which is so beautiful as an entrepreneur to have.
Totally.
In this day and age.
And you guys are already a step ahead and paying attention to analytics. Cause I guess that would be my biggest, if I could give one tip,
yeah.
is pay attention to the results.
Yeah.
If you don't, you don't know what to do more of and what to do less of.
Or to give people what they want.
Yes.
Like that's our big slogan around here. We're like, give them what they want.
Yeah.
That's what we're here to do. We're here to teach people about manifestation and to literally make manifestation as accessible, yeah. affordable, and easy to digest as possible yeah. so anybody can do it. Period.
I really love, you can feel that in all your, like, that's what I love about your guys' presence is that it feels like, you are genuinely, if you're plugging anything, it's coming from a place like, I want
It's
you.
Like, please do the work
I just
so
want
you manifest.
To help you. Yes. yes. And it's not kind of like, please buy my services yeah. or please help me increase my following. It's just a genuine, like, this help is here for you. I just yeah. want to keep reminding you until you finally say, okay, I'm ready.
I'm worth it.
And
yeah.
yeah. And so I really like that. And I think if more people can apply that to their market, like, what is your mission?
Yeah. What is your mission? That's great.
You know,
that's
what great. Is your mission? And like, if you're coming from that place, and that's going to show, mm-hmm. you know, in all your messaging, and you're coming from that place of like, this is my end goal. It is not to have this amount of sales. Mm-hmm. It is not to, you know, get this many downloads. It is to help you feel better about your life and like feel like, you know, you understand how to navigate it. And that comes through for you guys so much. So
thank
yeah,
you.
I would say just making...
I mean, we equal parts are like, even when, because we take risks, you know, we launched the whole like... subscription model, we yeah. had no idea how that was going to go. Because I'm not like, I just have no real research. We didn't know. And when we launched that, I'm really transparent with people. It cut our company in half financially right away. So
really?
We're still recouping, but
really?
It's so fun being like, yeah, now we yeah. know we're helping people more. And it's a video game to be like, cool, let's get people on board with this. Because not only does it help one, it helps everyone. So it's actually like something we're always strategizing. And truthfully, we couldn't have, I don't think, a direction forward if we didn't have analytics. Like, honestly,
yeah.
analytics are everything.
Yeah. I mean, I think the membership thing is great because I've recommended it to so many people. And I'm like, $24.99 a month.
It's like less than a dollar a month to...
I mean, how much do you spend on therapy?
That's what we all said.
And not knocking any therapist.
No,
but
know.
Like, I genuinely feel like some of this just cuts... Again, cutting the fat. You're like, let me get to the point. Like,
yeah.
what... You know, I can talk... my way to this one moment in my childhood, or I could just like go there right now.
And deal with it. Yeah, and deal. And like do a little brain yeah. surgery. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
That.
So I really think it's important to, you know, yeah, experiment, take those risks. Yeah. You're going to learn a lot from this, I'm sure, yeah. in the next few months of like how that's working. But I'm sure, I know as, you know, one of your students, I'd say.
Or just one of our, you're like our community.
Yes.
Because I'm shoulder to shoulder doing the same work you are.
As someone in your community. Yeah, I was really excited, you know, just because, yeah, it did feel so much more accessible.
Yeah.
And it felt like less of a commitment. It's like, oh, I could just start this tomorrow now.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like, okay.
I have a deadline.
Can I get this package and yeah. then I have to stick to it? And it's yeah. like, I'm doing it in my own time and it's yeah. working for me. And but yeah, I think keeping that at the forefront of whatever your social media messaging is, like, this is my mission. Let me get this to you. And keeping, you know, making sure that's incorporated, you're going to feel, yeah. you're going to come off and feel more authentic that way.
And for the person who's out there and they're like, what is a, you know, a social media director? What is that?
Yeah. So I started as a social media manager, but I guess the director just came when I started like hiring and training people. Mm-hmm. So yeah, basically at PETA, when I had worked at PETA, then I left for about 9 months to go work with a former PETA coworker at E! News at NBC.
Oh, I remember that.
Yes.
Yeah, totally. I even remember, this is expansive for people.
Yeah.
When I was leaving the preschool
yeah.
and I had no money.
I know, I was going to bring that up.
Yes, I even reached out to you because yeah. I was like, I know, because when I made my list, I was yeah. like, universe, I'm never going to work for somebody else again, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
But I'll do like freelance or whatever,
yeah.
you know, I'll pivot. And then I was like, I know I want to work for a conscious company. And I reached out to you and I was like, I had
Are you hiring for PETA?
Yeah, for PETA for social media.
Yeah,
and you were like, I'm going to be really honest with you. Can you handle
yeah.
it? Like you were so on. I was like, fuck, I don't think I can.
Yeah.
I don't, I'm too sensitive.
It's one
for
of those things that like, you got to be ready to yeah. dive in.
And feel it all.
Yeah. yeah. And So I guess when I came back to PETA, I went to E! News and I was like, I've probably never felt like I was just kind of like playing a role in a job because yeah. I was like, I was the only one that, you know, we're at a celeb news company. I didn't know who anyone was. They're like, we're at a meeting. They're like, so-and-so is getting divorced. I'm like, I'd have to look around and be like, what is that?
I picked up my mom who's like an alcoholic and like reads all these things.
Yeah.
And she had a People magazine the other day and I opened and I was like, who are all of these?
I know.
I guess it's like reality stars. I don't know who anyone is
anymore.
That was
my life for that time.
Well,
I was like, if you talk about music, I can talk about, you
yeah.
know, but I was so out of my element. So I knew that I was going to leave there. PETA got kind of wind of that and was like, hey, would you want to come back? So then I came back as a social media manager and I was supervising one person at the time. And I did a lot of it myself for a long time and it was so successful that we just had a demand. Mm-hmm. I guess it was probably organically like how you developed a team. I don't think you set out like, I'm going to have this by this time.
No, and, yeah, we keep adding as we go.
Right?
Yeah.
That's what happened with us. It was so organic. It was like, okay, well, geez, our Facebook is blowing up. I can't do this alone. So let's hire another person. Okay, let's hire another person. And it took me a while. Like, you know, I had like a team of two or three here and I was just driving the social media strategy. Mm-hmm. I was like, here are the stories we're going to tell. Here's how we're going to tell them. Mm-hmm. Here's who we're going to work with to tell, you know, like, you know, kind of navigating that. And again, like trying to make this extreme, quote unquote, extreme perspective more digestible for people.
Totally.
So I eventually hired, I think by the time I left, so I came back to PETA, by the time I left five or six years later, I had a team of 13.
Wow.
So I went from 2 to 13.
That's legit.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I, you know, by the time I left.
They're probably seeing it's one of the most effective ways to communicate.
Oh, or, yeah.
I would assume.
Yeah. I mean, by the time I left, we had won many awards. We were compared to a lot of marketing brands on social media like Red Bull and Coca-Cola.
Wow.
And, you know, these are people with like $1 million
Congrats,
ad budgets.
I know.
And we're like this nonprofit talking about like go vegan and
yeah.
nothing, which is like what no one wants to hear.
Totally.
And we made it, you know, we did it. And, you know, we had so many successes together. I think that was the hardest part. I mean, honestly, if it wasn't for that team, I think I would have left sooner.
Yeah, yeah.
But I still do. I still feel like we're such a family. We had such a special connection. And it really meant something to me to like hand pick these people and train them and mentor them and then watch each of them blossom into their own experts of their own rights and teaching me things. And
totally.
That's, you know, as someone, I never considered myself like as someone who was going to mentor anyone, but as someone who's teaching someone anything, that's the greatest gift you
the
can
dream.
Ask
yeah.
is that they become so great at something that they're teaching you things.
Totally.
And they're just still killing it. I love watching their success now. And I'm still very close with all of them and very special place in my heart. But yeah, so watching that success, I mean, we, you know, I think our biggest success was, you know, we would start campaigns on social media that PETA wasn't involved in. So like I found a really horrific video of a coyote being killed for fur and
because every one of those
Canada goose
that we wear
so we didn't
tail.
People didn't know that that was real fur and we released this video and it got like I don't know it had to be upwards of 30 million views and Canada goose it launched I mean PETA still has a campaign against Canada goose we've had tons of celebrities come on board their stock has dropped we had a whole challenge in New York where we go around show people the footage and they would take the fur off because it's removable
and
they're like thank you for showing me that I didn't know that that coyotes were killed like this so I have you know there was a lot of great accolades that we had that I felt like, you know, we kind of started on our own team. It wasn't
like
a PETA corporate like goal. We just were like, you know what? We see a need for this awareness here. We're going to talk about it. And then it kind of turned into a PETA campaign.
Wow.
So yeah.
I mean, that's humongous. That's huge.
Yeah. And I do believe, you know, and I didn't think that SeaWorld was going to be as, you know, like taboo in my lifetime as it had. Like, you know, when I started working at PETA, we were just like, oh, you crazy PETA people, you just think everything's wrong. Now, most people understand what's wrong with SeaWorld and like how orcas surf there. And like Ringling Brothers elephant. Totally. You know, I didn't know that they were going to close that circus in my lifetime.
Isn't that incredible?
It's insane. Mm-hmm. And I genuinely believe that social media had a huge impact in that. So I do feel, you know, I left feeling like, wow, I really do feel like I've had an impact.
Yeah, you did start a different type of revolution.
I feel like...
I mean, or you were a big part of a different type.
I do feel, you know, and I felt that from, you know, our founder and the VPs would, you know, say to me often, like, you know, you're making history, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this has never been seen about animals on this scale before. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that was one of my proudest things to have accomplished there, is to really bring some of this to the masses through social media, which is something that, you know, can be such a love or hate thing.
Totally. For the person out there who's like, I hate Instagram.
And just so everyone on, you know, listening knows, I am not like, I have never put myself really out on social media. Like, I'm probably the only social media director who has less than 1,000 followers.
Yeah, but you do have to follow her, because I mean, all her whole social media is just traveling the world. It's incredible. You guys are always
traveling.
Somewhere.
I love traveling a lot. It's my medicine. And a lot of it was like, it was my medicine to deal with the things I was dealing with. I'm God, if I need a break from all this sadness. Yeah. But yeah, so I've been kind of like this private social media person. Like, I really like working behind the scenes under the guise of a brand, but like really
being able to take that drive. Yeah, I love that. Well, let's pivot into relationship, because you guys have been together for ages. You guys are like the most attractive couple, I think. I mean, if you had a kid, I just don't even know what that kid's going to look like. It's going to be beautiful.
People, it's funny that people say that to us a lot. Like, this woman stopped us on the street the other day. She's like, are you guys going to have children? And I'm like, I'm sorry, do I know you?
Yeah, totally. It is such an offensive question out of nowhere.
No, you know, it's just totally. Like, we're literally crossing the street. She said it in the crosswalk.
Oh my gosh.
Like, yeah, so Rahad, he's such a magical human.
He's a creature. Yeah. He's like a beautiful, majestic creature.
I 100% agree. I almost feel like I don't deserve all of him. He's just let's see. I actually met him because I walked into his bar.
Oh yeah, Thirsty Crow.
Girl
it's
walks into
I
a
met
bar.
My ex. I was cocktailing there and Ryan showed up.
Yeah.
And I was totally...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Everyone's like, you'll never meet your person in a bar. And we were together for almost 6 years.
You know, there's been so much love found in that bar.
Totally. Thirsty Crow.
Yes. You know, Sean and Liz, right?
Oh my God,
they're
totally
engaged.
Jesus.
I know. Yes. And I mean, they're like our...
They're amazing.
I love them.
She's an Aries too.
Yes. Oh, she's one day apart. We are like, poor Sean and Rahad share war stories of the Aries fire that goes through.
It's the fire. Yeah.
But yeah, so I walked into his bar, and it's funny because I had been to Thirsty Crow so many times and I had never seen him there. I even knew other people that worked there. And I was there with a guy friend of mine, and he's like, after a drink, he was like, I can't believe you haven't noticed that guy over there.
Was it a type? Did you have a type?
I didn't think I did, but he seemed to think I did. And I was so not looking, that's they say when you always like.
Always. Yeah.
I was like so on a plane of like, I am independent. I was just about to go back to PETA, having worked at E. And I was like very focused on that. And I was like, that guy? Oh, well, he's bar backing like on a Friday. He's probably 23. I don't know. I was so judgmental. I was just like, whatever.
I think women in bigger cities kind of, that they have to be discerning.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you know, that protective shell on me was real
strong,
thick. So I was like going to knock down anything this guy. You know, I was like, no, I'm not looking for that right now. So I go to the bathroom and I come back. He's like, he's 33. And I'm like, what did you do? Did you just ask him how old he was? I'm like, stop it. He's like, well, it's fine. It was natural. I was like, how did you ask a stranger?
Yeah, naturally.
I'm like, now I'm so embarrassed. I have to sit at this bar and he's going to think, I'm like, whatever. And I was like, I guess he's kind of cute. And then I was like, well, he's obviously gay.
Yeah, he's tall and graceful,
and he's like
fashionable.
Dancing around. And
he's
I'm just
from San Francisco. I know. He's like hippie, like he's bohemian.
Thinking like, what? He's actually from Philly.
Oh, he is from Philly.
Yeah, he's from the East Coast.
But he lived up there, right? In San Francisco?
I don't think
so. Totally making this up.
I don't think so. I can see how you would see that though, because he's got, I could see.
He's groovy.
Very groovy.
Yeah.
He's got that vibe. So then I go to the bathroom a couple drinks later. I come back. He's like, he's straight. And I was like, stop talking to him. Oh my God, this is so embarrassing. So I'm like sitting there and I'm like, okay, well now I'm going to look at him. And he wouldn't look back at me because I didn't know this at the time, but he didn't normally bar back. So it was under his bartender face that he made no eye contact with anyone because then they would ask him for a drink.
Yeah.
He was filling in for someone that day.
Oh, wow. So, it's probably Kai or something.
Oh, I love Kai.
Who was also my boyfriend that worked at the Thirsty Crow. Yes.
God, that's, talk about a creature.
Totally. I such love a creature. That creature. They're very like creaturey.
Yes.
In a way. Yeah.
Yes. That's why they like each other so much.
Yes.
So then like at some point, I think we talked or my friend talked to the girl who was working with Rahad. She talked to Rahad. And was like, that girl over there is asking about you. He's like, who? She's like, that, she says, that pretty Asian one. And he's like, wait, her? No way.
Oh, she's not. The chills.
And he didn't believe her. She's like, I swear to God. She's like, she's with the dude. What the hell? Yeah. She's like, no, no, they're just friends. He was asking you, right? And he's like, oh, yeah. So we're talking to her later. He comes over and he's like, hey, my name's Rahad. Like, Kim says you guys are really cool. I'm so busy. I wish I could talk to you, but I can't. So I just want to introduce myself. And he shakes Ben's hand. And then as he shakes my hand, he slides a matchbook over.
Oh my, I have. That's so suave. I have and the I'm chills.
Like, and I just like, okay, is that for me? So I like take it. I'm like, okay. And then I open it and it says his name, his email, and his phone number.
Email! I know. Put his email.
He's such a nerd.
Oh my God. And he's so not like this, right? He's like
he's a big nerd though.
Yeah. No, but I mean like oh, no, Casanova.
No, no,
that's
so,
not his vibe
no,
at all.
No, no, he's yeah. so not.
Because that's smooth.
He's very like wait to be invited yeah. kind of guy.
Projector.
So, yes, projector. So so we texted that night and then we were like, great to meet you, great to meet you. He was going to New York. He's from New York at the time. He was going back there. I was going back to Monterey for 2 months. And so we were like, okay, well, let's hang out when we get back. So I was calling him Rahat. So I was like, I was like, that Rahat better call me. He's hot. Like, I was so telling all my friends. I was like, I met this guy and he like wouldn't look at me even though I was staring at him and it pissed me off. And then I thought he was 23 and then I thought he was gay and he wasn't any of those things. So finally we both get back into town and a few days go by and I'm like, he hasn't called. Mm-hmm. What's going on? And I was like, oh, well, he doesn't deserve, I'm not calling him, you know? So my friend calls, he's like, you want to go to Thirsty Crow for happy hour? Because at that time, that was like
that's
our thing.
That's just your hangout. That was our thing. The Silver Lake thing, yeah.
And I was like, I'm not going there. He didn't call me. Da, 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 da. And he's like, well, you know, it was a Friday. Today's a Thursday. He's probably not ready. I'm like, you're right. Let's go.
Yeah.
We go over
of
there.
Of course he's there, yeah.
He's the only one in the bar.
During happy hour.
We walk in and the bar is empty. The sun is shining through the like windows right on him. And he's like in the middle of the circular bar. And he sees us walk in. He just throws his hands up.
Oh, that's the one thing I give him. He's the best hugger on
I
the planet.
Know.
The most sincere, soulful.
And he always
soulful.
Hugs heart to heart. Yep. He always makes you change sides. He's like, yeah. No. But yeah, he throws his hands up in there. And he's like, oh my God, I was going to call you this morning. I woke up and thought about it. And I'm just rolling my eyes. And I was
like, you're
like, whatever. Yeah. And so we start talking and I was like, okay, in my mind, I'm like, okay, it's kind of cool that in the first 5 minutes of talking, we've talked about past lives.
Wow.
And we're in a bar and my friend is here.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but whatever, he didn't call.
Yeah.
And so I'm still doing my whole ego dance in the head. And then, you know, our conversation like keeps getting better and he doesn't have customers. So we get to actually talk. My friend Ben kind of takes off for a little bit.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I'm getting off in a little while. Do you want to hang out? And I was like, okay. Of course, he's like an hour and a half late.
Yeah.
And so I was writing him off again. But then we hung out that night. We talked all night.
Oh,
and I was like, who is this guy? You know? And he was thinking the same thing about me. And then our second date was a couple days later. And it lasted for 3 days.
Wow. And now it's been 7 years.
Yeah. So, well, 3 days later, we were like, have we been together for 3 days? And I was telling all my friends, oh, he's an actor. There's no way I'm going to take him seriously.
That's like a big thing in LA for anybody who doesn't live here.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, she's an actress. Oh, he's an actor.
Yeah. And I was very judgmental of actors. I just thought they were all vain and fake and
flighty.
And I was younger and I totally had an ego. I was like, I'm so much better.
Totally. It's so common
such
here.
Such a common thing.
Yeah.
And he, on the other hand, was like, well, I don't think I'm ever going to be in like a monogamous relationship or a serious, like,
wow.
I think, and so I was like, this is perfect. We can just be together.
Have fun.
Like, yeah. And so even after our 3-day date, we're like, yeah, this is great. And even 6 months in, I feel like we were saying stuff like, oh yeah, this is great. Like you know, you do you and I do me and da, 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 da. And I was still telling my friends, I'm like, yeah, but
yeah.
You know? And I guess after 6 months, we were like, I think we've been apart for like 4 days. And we've just, everything we would normally do, it's like, oh, I go to the farmer's market on Sunday. Or I would like to go for a walk in the park. Or I want to get out and go to Big Sur. Like,
I feel like, too, you guys were a good time. It was like always traveling somewhere. Yes. You guys were always somewhere.
Yes, it was like, okay, you like to travel, so do I. Let's get a ticket. So, So, yeah. And fast forward, I guess, 6.5 years later, and we are married.
I know. And you guys, so you eloped in Bali.
Yeah, we eloped in Bali last June. And so we're still in that newlywed kick, I guess.
Oh, I'm so happy for you
Thank you.
So anybody out there, I think that's an expansive, fun story.
Yes. I'll just also put it out there that I had a really rough Saturn return. And I went through all the phases. I was single for so long.
That's like, great for people to know.
I'd say I didn't have a full relationship for probably a decade.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's super expansive.
Yeah,
and what do you think made the change for you?
Well, I was in a pretty abusive relationship, my first long-term relationship in high school. And that kind of transcended through college. And that really did a number on me. And then in college, when I went to study abroad in Italy, that was kind of like my rebirth. That was the first time I was like, oh, I should be proud to be Korean and stop trying to be white.
Yeah.
Also, 9/11 happened while we were there. So there was like kind of the U.S. was knocked off this pedestal for a lot of American students because they didn't, none of the students that were there understood why that something like this might have happened.
Wow.
Or why America could be hated anywhere.
They had no clue.
No clue.
That's wild. Like even from, that's what I'm so curious about. Like even your family immigrating here, how much resentment and anger they must have at the U.S. I mean, just for what they went through in their personal life.
I feel like this is very common with Koreans. It's less resentment and more like trying to assimilate like it. Because, you know, Korea used to be predominantly Buddhist, but after the war, there's just neon crosses everywhere, all over the city.
It's
very predominantly Christian now.
Yeah.
Their measurements of success are very conservative American measures of success.
Jeez.
And so I feel like most Korean parents, the resentment just didn't even happen. It's just like, oh, how do we get as successful as Americans are? You know, and like, how do we kind of like, get to that level.
It was the new,
like goal.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Italy and just being in Europe, I traveled a lot and that really sparked my, I was really discovering myself for a while after that. Then I started working in the music industry and I don't think there's any surprise why I wasn't really sure.
Yeah. Totally. Real fun time. Yeah.
I was just like living my fantasy and being like, what?
Yeah.
Like, we get to date and like I get to come to these shows
know,
and it was fine for what it was, but I didn't find like that rock there. And I had just witnessed I had such high standards that no matter how much I wanted to be in a relationship or how much I like longed for that companionship, I'm just not someone who could like fake it.
Yeah, settle.
And so I was desperately looking for someone I was attracted to.
Totally.
That was my problem. I just like couldn't be attracted to anyone for a long time. And so, yeah, I just want to say that as far as being an expander in relationships, like I was single and so was Rahad for probably a decade.
Wow.
To the point that I was like, I might not be with someone.
Wow.
And I'm totally okay with that.
That's
like
awesome.
That just might be how my life is. I might just have relationships here and there, but like I'm ready to like forge this life on my own.
Totally.
And I think that's why we work so well together is because in
so
a
autonomous.
Way that we both still do. Like I would worry if he didn't want to go do stuff with his friends on his own.
Oh, totally.
And the same for, you know, we like to travel without each other once in a while. And like, you know, there's a lot of similarities there. But for anybody who's out there who's like, Valentine's Day sucks.
I know,
and like, you know, I just like, when is it my turn? It's like, I promise it's
being prepared for you. I say that.
And it's going to be so much better than you think.
Yeah.
And especially, you know, do Lacey's work because you'll see the energetics of it. It's just, it's almost like Tetris. Like you just need to move some things out of the way.
To have the perfect thing fit in.
And I also know what it's like to be in that point of desperation when it's really obnoxious to hear stuff like that. Totally. It's like, it's going to happen for you when you're ready. And I know, like I wanted to slap my friends who said that to me.
Yeah, I get it.
But it's so true. Yeah. Like it's going to come to you when it's time, you know?
Absolutely.
And usually that time is when you least expect it.
And that's the magic of it all.
Yeah.
Last but not least, because you, even when you were working at a nonprofit and not making like obscene amounts of money, what were your tips for traveling? Because you guys were always on the go.
Yeah. We do a lot of research.
Yeah, like so budget traveling.
A lot of research. We really shop around for tickets. Most of the places we've traveled to are fairly inexpensive to travel around. So, you know, we are not the kinds of people who go to like resorts.
Yeah.
You know, we really, you know, Airbnb like is surprising in foreign countries.
Totally
like what you
affordable.
Can find.
Yeah.
I would just say like think of those unconventional things. You don't have to stay at a hotel. You will find your way around. Like I think that's a big fear is like, oh, I need to stay somewhere where I can like someone can speak the language and all these things. Like, again, jump off that cliff.
Totally.
You're going to have such a different experience. Yeah. And saving. Like you do have to budget. You have to be smart. And, you know, we were very resourceful. Like we would kind of cut costs right before we left. And then when we come back, we would keep that tight until we felt like we could expand out again. Mm-hmm. But I was also very, you know, just fortunate that I found someone who's willing to do half the research and the work.
That's the
because,
hard part.
But it is a lot of preparing if you want to do it on a budget. So.
It is. But it's so doable.
It's
and you
so
guys,
doable.
Like, how often were you traveling? I'm just referencing your Instagram. Yeah. I was like, they're living the life.
Yeah, I guess after being together for like 2 or 3 years, we made it a pact that we would go somewhere every year.
Yeah.
Because it was so imperative to both of our spirits to have that reset. Gosh, how many times have we traveled? So we've been to Costa Rica, Morocco, Peru, Cuba, Bali, and I feel like I'm forgetting some others in there. Yeah. But those are the.
But also, they would be like back in Big Sur for the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
In Joshua Tree.
Yeah,
they were always gone. Would you camp?
Yes, yes. So we also we haven't been doing it as much, but we have a full moon ritual where we go. We started when we got together, Joshua Tree wasn't quite as populated as it was. It's funny what social media does to places.
I know. God, I was just in Tulum.
Oh,
I had
Tulum.
No
on
idea. I was like, this is like San Diego had a baby with Las Vegas.
Oh my God, Bali. I hadn't been there in 15 years. And when I went back, I was like, I literally don't recognize most of the places I'm at.
Isn't that crazy?
It's
all Instagram.
Yes, and Big Sur. I mean, God, growing up there, I'm watching it. She can't handle what's happening to her.
At all.
It's really sad.
Especially on the resort front.
Oh my
God,
the resort front. And I mean, the bridge is collapsing. That's not an accident. Like, it's not meant to hold that much weight with people taking photos on each side.
Totally.
And, you know, it's not meant to have irresponsible campers be like, oh, it's okay for me to have a campfire here. No, it's not.
No.
You just blew through 50 homes.
Totally. That's so, California in general, man.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it's been crazy to watch what social can do.
And that's another interesting perspective for the environment with social media. As magical as it is as a tool, it's just as irresponsible as
well. Totally.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So we had our full moon ritual and that would get us out into nature at least once a month.
Okay.
We haven't been sticking to it as much lately. We have a cat now, so we're like kind of crazy cat parents. And we just like want to stay home.
Yeah. I mean, it's so fun when you have them.
I know. It's so funny. A lot of my
friends... They don't want to go to the full moon ritual.
No, they're fine at home.
Yeah.
But a lot of my friends are like, wow, when's your next trip? I'm like, you know what? We're really good with our cat right
now. Since I got the house up there too, which is a whole other level. Like, I mean, I can't even tell you how much we've traveled in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
I'm like, only place I want to really go this year is Japan. That's it.
Really?
I mean, we have
awesome.
A speaking tour that I have to do, but otherwise I'm
oh
like,
God.
I don't want to travel.
Your speaking tour is going to be amazing.
I hope so.
I'm really excited for you.
You'll have to come to the one that's here.
Yeah, just as someone who you asked for a job so many years ago and like watching this journey, it's been so amazing and inspiring.
Thank you.
Because, you know, I have that entrepreneurial
You have, it's been brewing.
It's been brewing and I just like... I it's you know, I might jump off that cliff one day.
Yeah, one day, totally. Yeah. You're prepping for it all.
Yeah, yeah.
What is up for you next? Is there anything to look forward to?
Yeah, so right now I'm working for a plant-based baking company that just started. If anyone knows Beyond Meat, the Beyond Burger, our head chef, he helped produce...
Design it, yes, make it.
Yeah. produce these products that are plant-based, basically meats for the meat lover. And he is releasing a bacon. So it's a startup company. It's, you know, we have a lot of celebrity investors like Cesar Millan and Rob Dyrdek and all these things. And I really believe that this is going to have an impact on the lives of people because, you know, most people want to eat better, but they don't want to be judged. They don't want to be preached and they want it to taste good.
Yeah, they want it
and,
to be similar.
You know, a lot of our investors love bacon. So I believe in this product. I'm happy to be part of this company right now. But I also, I can see myself, you know, I'm still like considering consulting clients because that's what I was doing between PETA and this. Mm-hmm. And I have such a allegiance to justice.
Yeah,
like
totally.
I really want to help, you know, causes that are helping end suffering or bringing awareness to something that isn't getting enough attention. So I'm very passionate about helping with that in any way I can in my free time. So.
How do we get in touch with you?
Well, I am on Instagram. Again, you wouldn't think that I'm a social media director for my Instagram because I'm mostly just sharing pictures with friends.
Yeah.
And I don't do it anymore, but I used to go through and like block people I didn't know, even though
you're legit. I
became so private the more public my work.
Yeah, you needed that space.
Yeah, I was like, I need this to be mine.
Yeah.
But I'm no longer that crazy. So my Instagram handle is Harena, like Helena with an Asian accent.
That's awesome.
I know. It's like owning the shadow. So I'm making fun of it before you can.
Yeah.
So
taking your power back. Yeah.
It's H-E-R-E-N-A-H. So you could, you know, reach out to me there. Yeah, but that's awesome. Kind of my thing lately. So
thank you for being on and being an expander.
Thank you for having me.
The one
me.
Thing I like people to do at the end, I don't know if you're open to it. I guess this is a good way to own, you know, your Korean power. But I love if you can say in your native language to the Korean person out there listening that they can do whatever they want to do or what you're doing. And
I'm going to have trouble saying that in Korean because I'm like... I have such limited Korean conversational skills, but maybe I could just say it to them because I'm speaking straight to them.
Absolutely.
And I'm going to get heavy for a second
end. I won't even stare at you so you can really do it.
Because, I'm going to share something that some of my friends don't even know.
Great. This is, watch someone out their shadow. Here's how it goes.
I do think that this is important to say, though, just for every Korean, especially woman out there, if your parents are the majority of the voice in your head, which you will discover whether or not that's the case through Lacey's work. And that was definitely the case for me. Like, listen to your heart. My dad has had trouble accepting my marriage.
Mm.
And a lot of people, I think most Korean people are like, oh yeah, of course. You know, I think for the average other person, they're like, why?
I know.
You know,
even
like, it's just so important. You know, I don't have anger towards my dad. In fact, I just see him as someone who's in a lot of pain.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be sending him love no matter what. And I am going to hope that he comes, you know,
around
and love. Really doesn't miss out on this opportunity to like share his life with his family.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to say for anyone who's sitting there like afraid of that shame or afraid to just step into their own, you know, what they want to do with their life.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying by any means that I have it figured out and everything's going to be peachy, but I am saying to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like whether it's painful or not, like you're going to come out the other end so much clearer. I can't tell you what this like hurdle with my dad has opened up for me otherwise that I just probably would have, you know, not even realized it needed to be opened.
Mm-hmm.
One of them being, you know, diving into your work, but like the amount of people in my life who've had some kind of spiritual influence on me, like just being in tune with this rhythm and they like reaching out at the time that I need them to. And I'm like, wow, you had no idea how much I needed that affirmation of just like everything you need is within you. Like,
and you're on
you've
the right
got
path.
It. Yeah, you've got it. And I think we're seeing so much of that. Like I know for me, it is important to see Asian people in movies mm-hmm. and doing these things that I hadn't seen that
when
growing
you were growing up.
Up,
you didn't have any expanders.
No,
that
and
way,
so
huh?
it is it's huge. I mean, even that the show High Maintenance on HBO. Have you heard of the show?
Yeah.
So I, you know, Margaret Cho has this episode where she and her girlfriend are having these things, and I was like, wow, I don't even know if I've ever seen Asian lesbians
on
camera before.
Yeah,
and I was like, this is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Like, it's so
it's
important.
Time.
So I just want to speak. You know, I've been that, like, I've had trouble being seen because of that Korean shame, like, my whole life.
Totally.
This dichotomy of, like, okay, well, I want them to see this part, but not that part. I just want to say to anybody out there, like, take the leap. You'll figure it out. And even if it's painful, you'll still be glad you did it because you're going to come out the other end so much stronger and so much more aware of what you want and what's important to you.
Amazing.
And that doesn't make you a selfish person.
Boy, does it not. It makes you a magnetic person.
Yes, I
which we have all been programmed yeah. to think it makes us selfish.
And I just couldn't say all of that in Korean. I could
yeah.
have said like 80% of that,
yeah,
but
yeah.
I really wanted to get that across.
I think it's so beautiful.
Yeah.
And for every listener can benefit from what
yeah.
you just said, regardless of what walk of life you come from, because there's something you can resonate
yeah.
with in that
yeah.
that we all have experienced and been through. So thank
totally.
You so much.
You're welcome. My pleasure. Thank you for having
me. And kiss Rahat. Give him a hug, a heart-to-heart hug for
I
me.
Will. He's he was so excited I was doing this.
He's
and
the
he's
best.
Yeah, he's so excited for you too.
Thank you.
Your journey. So.
And everybody listening, have a beautiful weekend.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you so much for tuning into the episode, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did, we did. And in case you're not totally ready to join the pathway yet, I wanted to share a few of our free offerings that I'll often suggest to people as a little bit of a blueprint to get them started on their manifestation journey. The first place I like to direct people completely for free is The Motivation. You can see it linked below or on our homepage as our testimony library. And it's categorized by different subjects, whether you're calling in career, money, love, wellness, and much more. When you're reading about a member's experience of what they manifested, you're actually seeing to believe and showing your subconscious that that very thing is possible for you. The second place I like to direct people is to the free clarity exercise, which is also linked below. In it, you get to try our own unique hypnosis process, learn about the science, and some journaling prompts. And the best part about this, you'll get a tiny taste of what it's like to go into your hypnotic state, bring your subconscious forward, and create new neural pathways while receiving clarity. And the third thing, if you haven't listened to it on this podcast yet, please go back to the episode titled Manifestation 101, where you'll learn the basics of neural manifestation to truly understand this process. So go ahead and check out those free resources, The Motivation, the free clarity exercise, and the episode Manifestation 101, all linked below. And in an effort to make sure to have representation in this process series, go ahead and submit any process testimonials you have, especially to our LGBTQ+ community, our BIPOC, as well as the WISE, which is anyone in the community who is 45 and over. All right, we'll be back next week.